1935, the Lions win the NFL championship. The Detroit Tigers take the World Series. The Red Wings bring home Lord Stanley's Cup. Joe Louis begins his rise to world domination. This transforms the Motor City into Detroit, City of Champions.
Here we go, sticking it in the ground for episode, where are we at, 76?
76, we missed giving episode 75 a shout-out last
week. Yeah.
That's another milestone we hit.
We're shouting back to 75.
Yeah, last week we're ripping through it so well. We just 75. We're like 75.
We're just gonna went right through. Yeah, it. Yeah. Or just we get to 100. We'll have a party at 100.
Yeah, we had 75. We're like 75 of it. So that's pretty good though. 75. Yeah. We're on 76. We're rocking right through City of Champions, man.
It is. It's I got my golf club. I got my Walter Hagen wood shaft golf club. And we're ready to, and I got my Detroit City of Champions t-shirt.
I love that one. Got the big logo.
Yeah, I just, these are available for anyone. Chris, right?
Yeah,
Chris. Yeah, you Chris, and Chris.
Me and Chris worked on it. Chris really had the original inspiration for it. I just kind of helped
and,
them with a few
so
ideas.
It's got a little bit of everything for the City of Champions. It's got a lion, it's got a tiger, it's got three stars, a fourth star for Joe Louis.
Yeah, and Chris is, Chris is like a, he knows
the wings for the Red Wings.
Chris is all about those coat of arms too, so it's like that's about as close to official as
pretty
you
cool.
get.
It's and this is the big one. This is the larger logo.
Yeah, Chris, when we were designing that coat of arms, he knows what he's doing with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like he's not like this isn't just kind of like some kind of
this isn't just clip art.
Some random it's not just some random it's got some clip art.
There's some meaning.
But I'm just saying it's not like just some kind of cool, like we just put this design together like some randomly. Like there's actually
it follows some of the rules.
Follows all the rules of heraldry. Yeah.
All right.
Chris knows
It's a thing. So, I just like the one little star has 30 points on it for the 30 championships, and the crown is some significance as well. We keep on saying, we'll have Chris on and talk about
we'll
it.
We'll do an entire show. We could do a whole show about it and just have Chris
so
on
one day.
Too.
The other show I want to do, besides the one we're going to get to today eventually, is we've had a lot of cousins and nephews and daughters and granddaughters of people involved with the story reach out and say, oh my gosh, thank you so much for sharing the story, or I can't believe you actually are taking time with this part of the story or that part of the story. And that's pretty neat. And I want to kind of get all these people and talk to them all and then put a, it's tough to say, okay, call us on, Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and, but we can kind of piece them together
maybe when we come back around the barn, when we start doing some of the player stories and stuff, we'll just ask some of the people that that we've met and see if they want to weigh in a little bit. Norma Smith, I'm friends with her on Facebook. When we get back around, we talk about, go back to the Red Wings at some point, talk about Normie Smith.
Yeah.
That's her dad.
I'm excited to do that. That's another show I want to do. And then another podcast entirely. Once we're done with this, once we get to the end of the City of Champions story.
Oh, I meant to tell you, too. But really, before I forget the idea, I have Abby Goodfellow's granddaughter on my Facebook friends, too.
See? Yeah. And then we got to go do live shows from Portsmouth.
Yeah, I really want to do
it's,
it.
There's
first
so
week
much.
Of December, there's a big, there's a, they're celebrating
so
the,
much
the 90th anniversary of the Ironman game down in Portsmouth. They want us to come down and do a show down there. That's I really want to do that. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Our buddy Will Malt calling us up, bringing us, wants to come down.
I want to swing all of that, and I want to appreciate the people that are hanging out and watching the YouTube and watching on Facebook. And then they also listen to the audio podcast on all the podcast outlets. So wherever you're listening, be it a video rendition, a straight up audio rendition, take a time. And if you could leave a comment, that helps immensely. All the algorithms out there in the ether world, whatever.
Yeah, hit the share right now. Hit the like button right now. Whatever you can do, it really helps.
All those things. So yeah, those are fun. So appreciate if you could do that. Do it. I appreciate it. And wearingfunny.com is where you can get the very cool shirts along with other.
Can you add a link in the description for those?
They're always in there.
Oh, is it in the description? Yeah. Okay, cool. So yeah, the link's in the description.
The link's in the description.
Awesome. There you go.
It's right there for you. Cityofchampions.com is where you can get the books.
Yeah.
Just in time for the holiday season.
Or come visit me at the either 12 Oaks Mall or Partridge Creek in Clinton Township, the Inspire Marketplace. It's a made in Michigan art store. There's all kinds of
great. We're worldwide. We're national.
Yeah.
It's not everybody can slide on over to Partridge Creek.
Yeah.
So
12 Oaks Mall.
If they're driving in from, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I get it. They don't.
Missoula, Montana.
That's why I use the word or. It's not like mandatory. The website ships international, but or if you're in the Detroit area, stop down and see me at these two stores.
Absolutely. Walter Hagen. We were talking about Walter Hagen.
Yeah, like we were talking about him last week. And, you know,
that's why I got my golf club.
Yeah. Well, last week we had we were talking about his 1922, the exhibition tour with him and Joe Kirkwood and how, you know, the invention of the golf tee. Like, I mean, it's crazy. I was thinking about this, you know, it's kind of like the Sid Howe and Gordie Howe thing.
Yeah.
Like back then.
Yeah, yeah.
The golf tee was like what do you mean? There's a golf tee,
right?
You don't do that. You scoop dirt with your hand, a wet dirt. You ball it into a cone and you put it on the ground. And you hit the ball off that. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, that's how it's done.
and then it's like fast forward 90, you know, however many years later, 80 years later, and it's like that idea is like oh my God, I can't believe they did that. It's like
barbaric.
So foreign to us, yeah. And then it's kind of like that with, you know, Gordie Howe and Sid Howe, where it's like, is Sid Howe related to, when we were talking about Sid Howe, the question is Sid Howe related to Gordie? Back then, they were like, is Gordie related to Sid?
Right.
Because Sid was he was the all-time goal scorer when he retired.
Yeah.
And so they're like, maybe the Red Wings found a new Howe. Like, I mean, like, you know, that could be maybe as good as, they'll never be as good as Sid Howe. They'll never be as good as Sid.
Who knew?
Yeah, and then years later, the flip has happened where it's like Sid.
Sid,
was he related
to Gordie?
Was he any good? You know, are you kidding me? He was amazing. He was the best player.
One of the things that made Gordie strive to fill those shoes.
We showed the picture at that time, you know, at the NFL shows where it was Gordie meeting Sid, young Gordie Howe meeting, you know, basically. Yeah. Sid Howe on his way out the door. So anyways, where we're at today, last show we talked about the exhibition tour and how big that was, and then so this week we're talking about really just the next couple of years. That was 1922, right now is 1923, and really going into the show, I wasn't even sure what we were going to do today. I was kind of talking about this before the show.
I never know what we're going
to
do.
Well, I know you don't, but I was trying to give you a couple clues where we're going today, but I had no idea really going in today. And so I was just kind of like reading the next couple of chapters, you know. I mean, I've read the book a couple times, but I was just, you know, I'm just kind of going through it and, you know, just kind of the next thing. And, you know, really the very next year, 1923, I'm reading this stuff and I'm like this, the next couple of years are just like, it's almost like we titled this episode the Roaring Twenties.
Okay.
You know, Hagen in the Roaring Twenties, because like, at least for me, whenever I think of the Roaring Twenties, I think of like Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Hollywood, Hollywood, like you have all like these, like, all these actors
Gatsby
and actresses.
Stuff,
yeah, exactly. The Great Gatsby types parties and, you know, all these movies, like, you know, like these old 20s movie stars and all, like Charlie Chaplin and them and all these guys that are, you know, like that are just Errol Flynn. I think Errol Flynn was back in that. Was it Errol Flynn? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, these guys like Rudolph Valentino and these guys, you know, like this is the Roaring Twenties. Like I always think of the Hollywood, like the Flappers. And I think of, you know, I think of like maybe a little bit of New York, you know, with the speakeasies and stuff in the 20s. That's the kind of stuff I think about. I've always thought about the Roaring Twenties. But today I had a totally different vision and a view of the 1920s, and it was through the eyes of Walter Hagen.
Mm-hmm.
Because these couple of years we're going to dive into today, 1923 and 24, are like, when you're done, when we're done today, like my goal today is to paint a picture of this, of Hagen. And it wasn't really until like today and maybe even the last couple of days that has dawned on me. Like if you bring up the cover of the book, that we've been using, you know, citing so much of Hagen's, in his Hagen's own story, that, you know, it's so the cover of the book, if you zoom in on it, I don't know if you can zoom in, but
no,
okay. On the left side, if you look close, you know, if you can't see it, and right on the cover book of his book, it says, it's called, the book's called Walter Hagen's Story, The Walter Hagen story. And then next to it says, I never wanted to be a millionaire. I just wanted to live like one. So he never wanted to like necessarily accumulate wealth. Yeah. He just wanted to live the lifestyle of one. And as we've already kind of talked about before, he would basically go, he was basically living sort of paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
But the thing is, like, he would, he would have some huge, big money pile come in, and he would live it up. And he would burn through that cash, and then he would like, oh my God, I got to go compete for that British Open. I got to win it, for this third attempt at the British Open.
Got to go panhandle on Wall Street.
Yeah, he had to go to Wall Street. And he's like, thank God I knew like the great bear of Wall Street who would one day predict the stock market crash in 1929. Thank God I knew him, and I could just sit in his office for 10 days following every move he did and making enough money for me to live off of for a couple of years. And he even cites this book. He's like, I still had enough money from what I'd made from Jesse Livermore those 10 days. He even says it like in 23-24. He's like, so that's what I mean. Like that's when I've looked at this book many times, and the cover, it's always been kind of like a quaint saying, but like on the cover of his book.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never understood, like, why would he put that of all the things?
And
this episode today, I think we're going to be showing a little bit. I think we're going to go a great deal towards what that statement means why he put that on the cover of his book.
Because it was very modest beginnings, for sure.
Well, very modest. He never wanted to be, he doesn't want to be this guy that's got $1 million in the bank and all this thing. No, he wants to be the guy that lives like a millionaire, right?
Yeah,
so that's what we're going to sort of talk about today is this incredible lifestyle that this guy has got, okay? So we're going to begin with just a very basic fact in 1923. Walter Hagen gets married to a woman named Edna. Okay.
Aww.
And I think you had that on the cover for today's episode. So this is them on a ship. They're about to head out to the 1923. They're about to head to Europe for Hagen's attempt at the 1923 British Open.
Okay.
Which again, he was trying to win back to back opens in 23. So anyways, so this is him and Edna. So he gets married But this that picture is actually a little bit ahead of where we're at this exact moment in 1923. Sure. But anyways, Hagen gets in the 20s. There's what was called the Florida real estate boom.
Right.
Okay. From like 1920 to 1926. It was right at the early 1920s. And what was happening was, Florida was like this was the next big thing.
Yeah.
It was the next big thing. All these people that made all this money in the auto industry and all these people, they were going on to Florida and they were buying themselves entire areas their own cities.
In Fort Myers.
You're familiar with it.
Henry Ford.
Yeah, you're familiar with it.
And Edison. Yeah, because my mom is staying in North Fort Myers right now.
Yeah.
North Fort Myers and the Gulf is getting walloped by a hurricane. They're hunkered down. Everybody's so far so good. But it's cool to go down there and just see Edison's place and Henry Ford and Firestone. And they all had places down there. So all these Detroit.
I didn't know that. You're educating me right now. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So Edison and Ford have homes next to each other
really?
Down there. And they would hang here in Detroit, and then they would go down there.
Yeah.
And
in this first like sort of 5 years of the 20s, eventually it all kind of went bust.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a lot of people that lost like everything. These multimillionaires that lost a ton because they went too big. And so anyways, so Hagen gets invited down. He gets invited down by one guy and what was his name? Elliot. His last name was Elliot. Anyways, he gets brought down there by this guy going, hey, there's all kinds of opportunity down here. I've got some opportunities of my own. I'm building one of these like, it's like it's not just like when you say gated community, that's one way to put it. Another way is to put like a gated city that they're building. Like that's what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
They're building like their own little city down there. Anchored around some massive luxury property. That's like what they're doing. They're building golf courses. They're doing this. And so they're all building. They're carving up this whole all these territories. So this guy, Elliot, invites him down because the big thing that's going down down here is the St. Petersburg area is blowing up. And that's where that's why he wants to bring him down. So anyway, so Hagen goes down there. He's like, okay, cool. He goes down there and what's kind of funny is he takes this steam, they go on this yacht. Okay. Again, now we're starting to enter into Hagen's experience, why I call this the Roaring Twenties, okay? So Hagen gets down to, he's going down to Florida to be part of the real estate boom, to be part of this. And this is the first days of it, right? The early years of it. And so he goes down there, and the first thing he does, him and his wife, newly married, they go, they get welcomed onto this yacht, okay, to go out, travel around. They have a party on this yacht, cause welcome, welcome Walter down there, you know. And so, this Elliot, he asks him, hey, we're about to build this 4-mile bridge to connect Tampa Bay and St. Petersburg, right?
Right.
We're about to build this bridge, which would end up called the Gandy Bridge, which is they've torn it down and rebuilt it since, but at the time they're about to build this bridge to connect these two cities, right? So anyways, this guy Elliot asked Walter, hey, I'm about to be like, I'm like part in charge of like helping establish this bridge, right? Where should we build this bridge? And Walter's like, knows nothing about anything to do with building bridges. He knows nothing about this area. So he like quietly goes to the captain of the ship of this yacht, and he goes, hey, man, if you're going to build a bridge here connecting Tampa Bay and St. Petersburg, where would you build this? You know, and the captain's like, I would definitely, you have to build it from there to there. You know, like this is like, he knows everything about it. And so this, you know, you got this like old sea dog captain of a yacht giving Walter the, all the details and all the information, right? So this Elliot guy comes at one point, Hagen then, basically goes to this, to Elliot at one point and like, oh, I think you should build it from there to there. He just basically repeats everything this captain told him about this, where this bridge
should
be built.
Sounds like a genius.
Yeah, and they're like, Walter, man, you know your shit. You know your stuff. You know, and so they do. They build the Gandy Bridge exactly where Hagen, I don't know if he was the main person that would say that, but Hagen was like, sure enough, they built this bridge. He goes, I felt like I was like, he goes, I'm not saying they did build it for what I said, but it's exactly where I told them they should build it. And he goes, and I totally ripped it off from the captain of this ship during this yacht party, you know?
I love how honest he is in his
book. Oh, he's totally, he's like, I it wasn't my idea, but he's like, it was just crazy because like the next thing I know, like a couple years later, there's a bridge there. And I'm like, man, that's exactly where I did that. Was that for me? I ripped the idea off the captain of this ship. So it's just funny. Like, that's how he just is welcome there, right? On this huge yacht party. And then so he talks to this guy, Elliot, who's building his own, spread. And this guy's like, well, I'll give you 20. Yeah, by this point, Walter's, we talked about how he's the first club professional in Oakland Hills. By this point, Walter is like totally off that reservation. You can see he's world traveling. He's going to Britain, Scotland. Yeah. Now he's in Florida. This guy, it's cool that he says, there's Detroit influence through everything he does.
Right.
But at this point, he is a traveling guy that takes advantage of every kind of opportunity that comes in front of him. You know, he's going from making money to the next tournament, and then wins tournaments, and then goes to the next money. You know, so this Elliot is like, well, I want to make you like the main director of my golf course. You know, I want you to just do whatever it is to help me sell memberships and do whatever it is. You know, he's a superstar by this point. There's very few people, very, very few sports stars that are bigger than him at this point. This Elliot, he says, so I asked Elliot, how much are you willing to pay me? And he says $25,000 for basically 4 months a year to do this. Right.
Yeah.
At this exact moment, there was another guy, whose name is Jack Taylor. And he comes up to Hagen at this basically exact point. Hagen knows he's in demand for this area because whatever golf club he goes to is going to be like the spot in this area. So he goes to this other guy who's building this own property, and his name is Jack Taylor. And he goes to Jack Taylor and he says, I want $30,000, because now he has a benchmark for what he can charge. He wants $5,000 more than the other guy was going to pay him. And Jack Taylor's like, I don't know if we can do that. And he goes, he's like, okay, then I walk. It's literally because he knows he can walk away. He's got a $25,000 offer over here.
Yeah.
And so Jack Taylor goes, okay, I'll give it to you, So he does. And so so Hagen's getting $30,000 for 4 months of the year working at this building.
And
so
this is 1920 money.
This is 1923 money, yes. Yeah. And so what Taylor's building, this is like this fascinated me today. This is what like took me like an hour of my time today to like just read into this today. And you can bring this picture. So what Jack Taylor was building was this hotel called the Rolyatt Hotel. And I'll spell that out. R-O-L-Y-A-T. Mm-hmm. Rolyatt. Rolyatt Hotel. And so I didn't know this until I kind of like looked it up.
Rolyatt, yeah.
Rolyatt?
Rolyatt.
Have you heard of it?
I lived on Saran. Yeah. The next street over was Rolliott.
Holy, you've seen it?
No, I mean in Detroit, the east side of Detroit.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
And then there's Yolanda, and then there's it's Taylor spelled backwards.
I can't believe you nailed it. I had no idea.
It is. Saran is Norris spelled backwards.
Yeah, you're right.
And
you nailed it.
My whole little subdivision there in Detroit. Or a bunch of Civil War generals' names spelled backwards. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
We'd say, oh, it's a satanic neighborhood because all the names are spelled backwards.
That's crazy, man. And, oh, that is. Where's that at?
Seven and Van Dyke.
Oh, really? It's Detroit. Yeah.
That's
You just nailed it because I was looking at it going Raleigh. What does that mean? And I was like, actually,
just growing up, we always said Rolliott. But
Rolliott. Okay, whatever. That sounds better. I like the sound of that better.
That's his east side.
Rolliott. Yeah, I like that.
Polish kids in Detroit.
No, I like that. That sounds way better than Rolliott. You know, Rolliott. I like that. So, anyways. So, but it is Taylor spelled backwards.
Yeah.
So the guy's name is Jack Taylor, and he's naming his place
the Rolliott.
Rolliott Hotel. It's his name spelled backwards. That's it. That's all he picked his name for his hotel. So this guy's a total character, obviously.
Yeah.
Right? He's a total character. And so he's like, okay, Walter, we'll give you $30,000, you know, and he's like, we're building this hotel called the Rolliott Hotel. And Hagen's like, you know, I don't know if he was as quick as you, you know, you were just there to pick it up, but I didn't pick it up at all until I actually read about him. Like, oh my God, that guy's, he's named his hotel of his, why is he, you know, what did he just call it, Taylor Hotel or whatever, you know, he spelled his name backwards to put it out.
In purchasing power, that $30,000 today is over $500,000.
Yeah.
For 4 months.
For 4 months.
$500,000.
I actually have it
months.
Written down in my notes, Taylor spelled backwards.
Okay.
Like, you nailed it. That's awesome. Anyways, so we got the pictures of the Rolliott Hotel.
Yeah.
And look at this place.
Yeah,
okay.
It's pretty magnificent.
This is magnificent. I had to actually, I had like 10 different postcards from the 20s that I wanted to put up on this. If you have a chance, just like go to eBay.com. And just type in Rolliott Hotel. There are just the most coolest pictures. These old 20s postcards of this. And they're just like these. I mean, they're just so cool. There's a bunch of black and white photos on there people are trying to sell too. But they're just so. This place in the background, if you're looking at. So there's three pictures we have. You know, they're all, basically, just to describe for the listeners at home. So it was designed with the idea of a Spanish feudal castle.
It looks like a castle layout.
It's designed in a Spanish castle. There's 10 palm trees like at the entrance, and Walter Hagen himself brought those up from I think it was wherever is the south. Is Fort Myers in the south? He brought them up from the down in the south, and nobody had ever like grown palm trees up in this. They didn't think they could grow this far north.
Okay,
and so they planted the ones he brought, and they all grew. He said they're the ones that are there were the ones he brought up. So like the ones that are there, if they're still there at the entranceway, like Hagen planted those. He brought those up. Like that's because he was there when
what
that was.
What city is this in again?
This is insane. This is the city at the time was called. I have it here. It was called the. I have it written down somewhere from here.
Yeah. But what area generally is it?
St. Petersburg.
Oh, it's okay. St. Petersburg.
Yeah,
all
but
right.
He had it called. It had a cool name. It was called. Something on the. What was it called? Could you look up Rolliott Hotel while I'm talking? So you can get it. Because I had it. I did. Oh, no, I got it right here, actually. Yeah. I had it up here. It was called Pasadena on the Gulf.
Okay.
Now it's called Pasadena Estates.
Okay.
So, Walter talks about it in the book. They were trying to name the city.
Right.
They had all these crazy names. And he was like, and then somebody was like, what about Pasadena on the Gulf? Like Pasadena, California.
But on the Gulf.
Yeah. And so this, in the bottom postcard, these are just these sprawling Spanish castle looking photos.
Mm-hmm.
And in the background, you see the Gulf of Mexico with this massive beach that runs all the way up. And so like this town, this city that they're founding out there is like, this is the anchor of this area that they're building. This is Pasadena on the Gulf with this just ridiculous beach in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, open it up to the Gulf of Mexico. So anyway, so Hagen goes down there in 23 when they're just, you know, this thing has not been built yet. And so he's down there. And so he just got married. This guy is, you know, he goes down to Florida. First thing down there, he goes on this yacht party. And then while he's there, while they're building this thing, Jack Taylor gives him and his wife this Spanish villa to live in.
Oh,
So, okay. You know, he's in charge, like, they're building the golf course, so he's working with the architect to, like, design this golf course. So his job is, like, he's giving lessons to, you know, he's trying to set their, one of the, what they're trying to do is they're trying to lure other money people down there.
Sure.
So whenever somebody comes down there to check out what's going on, you know, Hagen's trying to sell him, like, you know, memberships to this, you know, like, to this club.
Yeah.
And then also, like, get him to buy real estate in the area so they can get, you know, they can start getting businesses and stores and stuff, you know, and just people living down there, you know, to build a community. They're trying mm-hmm. to lure people into their community. That's the idea. And so the entire time, so Hagen says in there, he says, they lived in this Spanish villa with his new wife, Edna, and we hosted many parties.
Well, he's making $125,000 a month.
Now we're starting to get into Hagen's 1920s experience.
I'd throw a little party if I was making $125,000
a little party. He goes down there. The first thing that happens, he goes on a yacht party where he picks out the spot for a bridge, which they build a 4 mile span.
Yeah.
Okay, which is still there. Like I say, they ripped it down and did another one, but very nearby, like to update it. But you know, it was there for like 50 years. This mm-hmm. massive 4 mile bridge that he's like. I mean, imagine the Mackinac Bridge. You're like, oh, I was out in the yacht party with my friend, and I was like, yeah, they should really build a bridge there. And then like a month, you know, a year later, you go there and there's a bridge right where he told him to build.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know, like you'd be like, yeah, man, I got some pull around here.
Yeah.
You know? And you're talking to the guys who are building it and all. You know, these are guys with the yacht party. And then, of course, let's say he gets this $30,000, you know, every 4 month gig at this Spanish feudal castle that's being built. And he gets a Spanish villa right down by the right on the beach with his new wife Edna, and he's hosting many parties. He's hosting many parties, you know, to host all these new people coming down there.
Mm-hmm.
This is roaring 20s, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is amazing. This is how you live a life, man. Like
Miami, yeah. Miami got nothing on Waltz in the 20s.
No, nothing. And so here's the thing. The other thing. While he's down there, he's also nearby all these Major League Baseball spring training sites.
Right.
So
right,
I got a
right.
quote real quick here. He's talking about golfing with all these different baseball players.
Oh my God.
He's got a segment where he's sitting there talking about golfing with Babe Ruth
and
how Babe's golf game. He's talking about this while he's down there.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes he's on the beach and trying to sell people memberships and golfing with people, randoms mm-hmm, that come into mm-hmm. town. Sometimes he's throwing parties at the Spanish villa on the beach with his new wife and all these celebrities and them coming in. Other days, he's just going down to the spring training, you know, hanging out, watching, maybe playing catch a little bit with these players.
Right.
Other times, these players are not, as we're going to read in this quote, they're not even supposed to play golf because these baseball managers didn't want them to play golf.
Yeah.
And they're playing hooky with the team and running off with Walter Hagen to go play golf with some of the biggest stars in baseball history. This is a real quick quote here. So manager Joe McCarthy of the New York Yankees put a taboo on golf during the training season, but a number of the fellows sneaked over for bootleg games. Babe Ruth and I played many rounds together with Babe Ruth. One thing I noticed peculiar to Babe's game and to that of most ballplayers was that for the length of time an average ball game consumes, Babe was a fine golfer. He could concentrate. After the hour and 50 minutes duration of a ball game, or about the 11th hole as golf is played, the Babe began to slop his shots away.
Mm.
He usually went out comfortably under 40. However, returning, meaning probably the back nine, he had to struggle to play a 15 handicap golf. Years later, in 1936, Billy Burke and I played with the Babe in the True Temper Open at Detroit, and his game still followed that pattern. Babe Ruth has always been touted as the top money player among all-star athletes, and I took a leaf out of his book.
Well, because Walter thought about baseball
totally
a little bit himself.
Yeah, he was into it. We're going to see. I got pictures of him in the spring training of the 34 Tigers, 34, 35 Tigers. He was at their spring training.
That was when you put him in the Phillies uniform.
I know. I love that picture. It's perfect photoshopping, too. So anyways, but when he's not at the beach or, you know, hanging out, giving lessons to millionaires or, you know, having parties at his Spanish villa, he's over at spring training, you know, with Babe Ruth, golfing. And also, here's a few other names. This is the other thing. Look, you might recognize a couple of these names. I also played golf with Rube Marquard, Jimmy Fox, Mickey Cochran, Cy Perkins, and numerous other famous ball players. Among the writers who wintered in Bel Air nearby were the great sports reporter Grantland Rice, Dickie Martin, who had accompanied me on the first trip to England, so that Dickie Martin was with him, mm-hmm. George Ade, Rex Beach, and Ring Lardner, founder of Ring Magazine, were frequently partners of mine. So these guys are, like, he's golfing with the biggest sports stars. These are the biggest sports stars in the world. He's golfing with, like we mentioned there, Mickey Cochran's down there.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, Mickey Cochran at that time was playing for the A's.
Right, okay.
And so he's one of, I mean, they went to the World Series their first time right about this time. But anyways, yeah, he's golfing with Babe Ruth and Jimmy Fox, Mickey Cochran. Like, this is what he's doing down there. This is, look at this guy's lifestyle, right? So this is, yeah, like, so this isn't it, right? So this is not even all of it. So anyways, when this hotel finally opened January 10th, 1925,
yeah,
there, the opening night for this hotel was, it says there's, I read another story online about it. They said the opening night was full of celebrities. It doesn't really mention exactly who, but I've got a list. You know, let me just run down a few people. It just said these are just general people that are just famous guests in general.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's funny is this comes off of Wikipedia. In baseball, George Herman, Babe Ruth, Jimmy Fox, Mickey Cochran, Rube Marquardt, Cy Perkins. The very first five guys that Hagen mentions right here that he played golf with.
Yeah, yeah,
so what
are
the, so, I mean, like, you know, Walter Hagen in his book and Wikipedia, they got a pretty, those are exactly the guys that he mentions in his book, right? And so it's like, yeah, those guys were there. Those guys were at this place, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
Walter Hagen, some of the famous golfers, Walter Hagen, Chick Evans, Gene Sayers, and Jock Hutchinson, whose names come up numerous times. Joe Kirkwoods was there. Lori Eiton, Bob McDonald, Bobby Jones. They're down there. Socialized entertainers, Cornelius Vanderbilt III, Daniel Guggenheim, Frida Hempel, Gally Kersey. Like, there's, like, you know, there's,
he's
these
rolling
are,
with the big dogs.
He's rolling with the big dogs, right? These are out the thing. But check this out. For this, for the opening night for this hotel, the champagne, the main fountain of the hotel was champagne. It wasn't water. The fountain was issuing champagne out of the fountain.
It was a cheese fountain with six different kinds of cheese.
It wasn't
it.
The kind
oh,
of
no,
fountain
that's
where
Ricky
you,
Bobby.
Where
right,
you pour
mind.
The fountain and it kind of rolls down the bunch of glasses.
No.
This is a fountain.
Fountain.
A fountain big. Where you're doing that champagne. You just go dip. Could you imagine a party like this? This is the Roaring Twenties, man.
Roaring.
This is seriously roaring. They're down in Florida on the Gulf Coast in a brand new Spanish feudal castle. And here's a description that
I'm dreaming.
That Hagen right had now. About this Rolliott Hotel. So this is his little quick quote I wrote down. Jack Taylor's Rolliott Hotel was the most magnificent and luxurious hostelry constructed in the booming 20s. Mm. Walter Hagen's own words. The most magnificent and luxurious hostelry constructed in the Roaring 20s. This was the number one spot that Hagen saw, and he saw a lot of them.
Right.
He saw a lot of places. Yeah. He said this is the most magnificent. And when you see these pictures of it, you get the idea. So imagine this opening night, 1925, every celebrity, star. And what's cool is it wasn't, you know, that you can imagine – it wasn't like overdone. There wasn't a bunch of cameras there. There wasn't a bunch of snooper photographers there.
Sure.
This is out in their own little corner of the world. These are some of the most famous and wealthiest people on earth.
Yeah.
They've got a fountain pouring champagne out of it. They got this massive beach. They've all been probably buying a bunch of little properties nearby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you want to hang out in the hotel or you want to go to Hagen's Spanish Villa? Let's
go
chill over at Hagen's Villa. You know what I mean? Like, they've got the cool breeze rolling off, the moon slit sky. I mean, this is like...
Get Daisy in the car, let's go.
This is, I mean, you know, they're disconnected from all civilization in the middle of this, of their own little piece of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Can you imagine how this was a special era? And this guy was at the dead center of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The whole world revolved around this, you know, like, I mean, at least for Hagen's kind of mind here. But like... This is the Roaring 20s. Like, I have a whole different vision in my mind about this, about the Roaring 20s now, from just reading this.
Right.
And there's a whole, you know, you can read it for yourself. I encourage anybody to read this book. It's tremendous. But like, this is, you know, and this is just the beginning of where we're going with this guy for the Roaring 20s. This is just the beginning, folks. If you're listening this far, like, if you think, like, okay, that's the episode up, Jamie. How long was that, 20 minutes? No, this is just the beginning.
All right.
Okay? Fountain champagne. Okay, champagne fountain. Who cleans that?
Yeah,
you have to have a special maid stand or somebody that's there making sure that there's nobody, you know, drooling in it or leaves getting in it or anything. Like, somebody there, like, there's somebody in this world that has told a story, like, in our past that said, my job at this opening night party was to was to make sure the champagne fountain stayed running smooth all night. Like there was that was somebody's job that evening.
Oh man.
So anyways, so that's where that's our jumping off point was that, you know, this is where Hagen's kind of so from 23 to about 26 is when Hagen's kind of involved with all this.
Wow.
And so yeah, so this is what he's doing for these. So like because now we're gonna jump from there. We're gonna go to the British Open in 1923. Mm-hmm. But the reason was cool to mention these like sort of 3 years with this Florida thing is because he's gonna be going from his little home base here in Florida.
Yeah.
His little 4 month gig in Florida. Now he's got armed with $30,000 worth of ammunition.
Yeah.
To go wherever the hell else he wants to go, and we're gonna see here in a second where else he does go. But he's got ammunition to go to whatever golf tournament he wants to go to, win it, go to the next, win it. You know, he can do whatever the heck he wants to do. And as we're going to see here, it's just incredible. So 1923, you know, Hagen, he's just on a tear. He wins the North and South Open, which is in America. He won the Texas Open. So it's three different opens, the North, South, and the Texas Open. He finished seventh against Bobby Jones, who won the number one in the U.S. Open. He was first in the U.S. Open. Hagen finished seventh. And then he finished second in the PGA Championship. So in 23, he goes out to Troon, Scotland for the 1923 British Open to see if he can win his second straight, you know, Open. He won his first in the previous year. And so there's this huge dramatic finish, and Hagen loses by one shot.
Ugh.
But it's this huge, like, dramatic finish,
right,
where like it's like goes all the way down to literally the last stroke, and he loses to a Brit named Arthur Havers. Okay, so anyways, so this is where it's kind of interesting for this. I quote about the reason I mentioned it was close. It was this like super thrilling, like he walks you through a lot the whole thing, but it gets all the way down to like the last stroke, and the whole like everybody is hanging on like the last strokes here for this. I think it was like he missed a shot, and that's what gave Havers the championship. Anyways, so it's like this huge thing, and everybody's like super excited. Hagen and Arthur Havers are like the toast of the town, kind of like this. You know, it's almost like it's in a similar situation to some of these other events we've covered, where it's just everybody in the area is just glued to it, and then like everybody that's involved with the final day are just, you know, heroes in that. So anyways, so this is where Hagen talks about the post, the event afterwards. So he says, our American boys, stopping at a hotel bordering the golf course, had expected to pick up their daily mail at the back door of the clubhouse. We're back to these clubhouses
and
the shenanigans that the Brits are playing. They're the last holdouts from letting pros come in, right? So that's where he's talking about. So he's coming from living this opulent lifestyle, the best superstar golfer in the world.
Yeah, and you get changed over there in the hot dog shack.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, that's where he's at. That's what's basically going to happen.
Yeah.
So he says, our American boys stopping at a hotel bordering the golf course had expected to pick up their daily mail at the back door of the clubhouse. They just want to pick up their mail. That's it. They're not going there to use their showers and eat off their fine china dining room. They're just there to pick up their mail in the back door. However, we were advised that all mail would be sent to the golf shop, so we, as the official stated, would not find it necessary to go to the clubhouse. So they sent it to the golf shop just so that the American golfers wouldn't find it necessary to have to go anywhere near the clubhouse.
Right, right.
So we sent it over there because we don't want you in the vicinity of it, right? And so this did not sit well with us at all. That's what Hagen says. After my shot missed and Arthur Havers became the new British Open champion, the secretary of the club came out on the green and insisted that I come into the clubhouse with Havers for the presentation of the trophy. So all of a sudden, there's all this excitement.
Oh, I can
Hagen
come in.
And Havers had this huge thing. Hey, Hagen, you know what? We'll make an exception. You can come on in, right?
Yeah.
He says, I walked up the path with them while the British bobbies held back the tremendous crowd following us. There's this huge crowd that wants to see what's going on. At the doorway, I stopped and turned to the enthusiastic gallery. I'm sorry I didn't win, I told them. I've been asked to come into the clubhouse with Arthur Havers for the presentation. I stopped for a moment and considered my words carefully. Then, at no time have we Americans been admitted to the clubhouse, I continued, not even to pick up our mail. At this particular time, I'd like to thank you all for the many courtesies you've extended to us, and I'd like to invite all of you to come over to the pub where we've been so welcome. so that all the boys can meet you and thank you personally. If the committee likes, they can present the trophy to the new champion over there. I turned and walked away with all the thousands in the gallery following me to the pub, leaving only the committee and Arthur Havers at the clubhouse. He took the crowd with him. And they were standing there by themselves with their trophy, and nobody cared.
And their $375 check.
Their $375 check. The trophy and nobody caring whatsoever. They'd rather go hang out with second place Hagen the pub. They all went over and followed Hagen. So this right here, we've already alluded to this story before in an article we read at the beginning of Hagen. Yeah. But this is a huge moment.
Right.
This is a huge moment. This is Hagen. Hagen is like the biggest sports baller on earth.
Yeah.
And they're not letting him pick up their mail. He finally has it. Like, he finally realizes his power at this moment. I mean, I realize he knows he's had it for a while. This isn't like he's been a church mouse not saying anything ever. That's not true either. But it was at it's like, he's like, you know what? Guess what? I'm not going in there, and I'm taking all your people with me, right? Like, that's who I am. And that's what, like, that is just the most badass statement, dude. He's like, guess what? We're from America. Over in America, the crowds, like, we are in the clubhouses. We are the clubhouses. Like, here, we can't even pick up our mail. So this is like, I'm done with this crap. I'm done with it, and I'm not taking it anymore. Mm. And he didn't. And so that's what's so great. So so as we're going to find out the sort of impact that has, because again, this is in the same, like, so he goes back to America, and he goes back to Florida, and he's living his thing, and he's doing his Spanish villa parties, and so he's doing this thing. And so he's doing all this, and so he comes back. This is where it gets really close. 1924, he comes back to challenge for the British Open again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this one is takes place in June 26th, 27th at the Royal Liverpool Links at Hoylake. And so in this, what's kind of interesting about this is he talks about this guy. He said there was a guy named Mr. John Ball that requested that he partnered with Hagen for this British Open, 1924 British Open.
Yeah.
And Hagen was like, this was like one of the biggest honors I ever had, was this guy asking me. And this Mr. John Ball, this guy was 63 years old. This guy, he was playing in his final British Open. This guy had the first British Open this guy played in, he was 15 years old as an amateur, and he played in the 1876 British Open.
Whoa, okay.
So this guy is a legend out there. I don't think he was a really big name. I don't know. I didn't really look him up too much, but I don't think he was like a huge name as far as like the world of, you know, like the, you know, the biggest names in the history of golf.
And longevity wise.
Yes. So. But within these golfing circles, like this guy was an absolute legend. Like this guy's talking to you about British. Oh, I remember British Open. This guy won the British Open in 1890. Like he's like, oh, I remember that 1890 Open, you know, like this is the guy that is like, this guy is like the connection to the roots of, you know, golf and the Open and all this. Like this guy was just, and so Hagen was like, man, this is like this guy's final tournament. Hagen actually says in there, like, this was like the biggest honor that this guy requested to play with me.
Yeah.
You know, like, and Hagen's a superstar. He's the number one guy probably, you know, in the world, basically. So that's just kind of cool, is that he plays with this guy, John Ball. He rolls around with him the whole show, or for the whole tournament. So here's I've got a pretty good quote for how this Open finishes.
Okay.
And like I say, after he does this whole thing, it's gonna get it's even more interesting than this. So we got 134 and 135. So anyways, so it all came down to this final hole.
Okay,
and he's going against this guy Ernest Whitcomb, who is like basically like they're just kind of neck and neck. But at this point, going to the last hole, he's like one shot ahead. He's just basically got to preserve this lead, and he's gonna finish up to win his second Open. So at the 18th, I was confident I had victory in the palm of my hand, for here was a short par 4 hole with the wind at my back. I got a long tee shot some 300 yards, leaving me a short 7-iron shot for my second. Again, a series of traps crossed the front of the green. However, they didn't seem to be too troublesome considering the shortness of the shot I had to make. I played my second shot too boldly and went past the flag to the back edge of the green. Here I was on this fast green, on the back edge at that, and I needed to get down in two. I putted down, sloping away, and left myself 5 feet short. Had I hit it a tiny bit harder, I would have rolled almost to the hole, but a semicircular ridge held my ball and left me with a most difficult putt. With such a fast green, I knew my stroke must be delicate. I looked over both sides of the hole. There was a slim chance of a slight roll as I went down a little incline towards the hole. I studied it carefully once more. I decided there was a double roll down the first 2 feet of the putt to the right, a slight roll to the left the last 2 feet. So it's like rolling right and then it's rolling left. Like it's like this putt-putt course. I stood and set myself with one thing uppermost in mind. I must hit the ball delicately. And in a situation like this, delicacy is difficult due to the extreme nervous tension one is under. But then I had a second thought, which helped greatly in my executing the shot correctly and in not becoming over-anxious to see where the ball was going. Should I miss, I'd only need to stay over another day to beat Whitcomb in the playoff at the British Championship. If I hold, I became the British Open champion. So he's like, you know, kind of like, if I do miss, then I'm still got a chance to win it because we're going to tie and we'll go into the extra round. Yeah. But so that's what kind of steadied him a little bit. So while 10,000 people held their breath, I stroked the ball, gently but firmly. It righted the last turn, straightened out, and headed for home. I threw my putter into the air and never saw the ball or putter again. But I sure saw that British Open trophy. My wife rushed up and kissed me. London Bobbies in their white helmets quickly surrounded us to give what protection they could from the thousands of gallery fans seeking to shake my hand and roaring congratulations into my ears. Some of them lifted Mrs. Hagen and me to their shoulders and carried us off the green.
Nice.
The committee asked Mrs. Hagen and me to come into the clubhouse for a champagne toast. She was the first woman ever to cross the threshold of the Royal Liverpool Links clubhouse. I suggested that McDonald Smith, who was an English and American, like sort of like dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. I suggest that McDonald Smith, who had finished in a tie for third, come along with us, and they graciously included him. An American golfer goes right in with them. They're like, oh, absolutely. We want McDonald Smith to come in with us. Mac on the wagon, but sportsmanlike, touched his lips to the rim of the champagne glass, but did not drink. I received another great ovation from the gallery when we mounted the platform to receive the trophy and other prizes. The crowd sang for He's a Jolly Good Fellow, accompanied by a fellow playing a cornet. So there, all of a sudden, next British Open. Oh, absolutely. You guys are more. McDonald Smith, bring him in. Bring him, your wife? Oh, first woman ever to sit across the doorway? Bring her on in. You see the impact he's had in just 1 year?
Now the
party's in the clubhouse, and they're all having a good time because Hagen's there. Mm-hmm. He's just brought the – he just changed the entire landscape in one – you know, in this with one step. Every other tournament we've talked about him over in Britain, he was heading to sleep in the barn in France. Yeah. They were trying to set him in the barn in France. Every British Open, they wouldn't even let him even look at the clubhouse.
Right,
and now,
now
there's the first woman ever. He says she's the first woman ever to cross this threshold at there. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's the impact that this guy is having. He's changing everything out there, right? So anyways... So that's this, you know, the door is finally open. That's like the last door to fall for as far as the respectability of professionals getting into these, you know, into the old world clubhouse, you know, where it was just amateurs allowed in there and the mercenary pros were not allowed. That idea is gone after this.
Right.
He's never going to be talking about this again. So anyways, so now's where it's just now. So he just won the British Open. Now's where it gets interesting.
He's going to Disneyland. Oh, no.
Kind of not that, but something else. So anyway, he wins this British Open, right? And so of course, as he did in the previous British Open, he gives his check to his caddy, this guy named Jimmy Anderson, who's a British guy, and then he takes off from there. Him and his wife, they go to the French Open in Versailles. They go to the French Open. It's in Versailles, one of the most magnificent places. There's a nearby golf course in Versailles, France, for the French Open. He finishes second at the French Open. He doesn't win the French Open, right? But who cares? You're in Versailles after you just won the British Open, right? And then, but 3 days later, Hagen goes to Belgium and wins the Belgian Open, okay? And Jimmy Anderson came with him from France to Belgium, and he gave Anderson his check from the Belgian Open, right? So he's just going from place to place. And then, oh, by the way, that same month, they go back to France, and what's in France at that moment? Oh, the 1924 Summer Olympics in Paris.
Oh, wow.
They're at the Summer Olympics in Paris, the 8th Olympiad. They're in Paris for the Olympics. Oh, they just only go to the wins the British Open. He plays at Versailles French Open. Then he goes to the Belgian Open, wins that, goes to the 8th Olympiad in Paris. I wonder if he had good seats there.
Yeah, probably.
You think he had good seats?
Probably had decent seats.
Think he had good seats? You think he was meeting any of the stars over there and had any kind of any good hangout spots? You know, he actually says in there, After several weeks of fun at the famous resorts and attendance at the Olympic Games in Paris, Mrs. Hagen and I headed for home. So there's this like, and then where are they going? They're going there. I don't know. Florida, back to Florida,
back to the Spanish villa. Yeah,
to the Spanish villa again for another 4 months of collecting $30,000 and, you know, hanging out with, trying to sell, get people to come down there and, you know, golfing with baseball players, you know, the superstars. He wrapped up his 1924 season in September by winning his second PGA championship.
Oh, yeah.
And then this would be and that was in French Lick, Indiana. And this second PGA championship, this would be the first of four straight PGA championships in a row for him.
Okay.
So he's just like, how many more things?
Yeah.
How many more, like, what, this is, you know, that's pretty much all, like, this is, that's the end. Then, and so closes 1924 Walter Hagen.
Yeah,
you're like, this is a guy that's going, living the life of, I mean, this shows you right here the kind of lifestyle this guy is living.
Yeah.
This is how you live, man. Like, like, you know, those braces, like, what would Jesus do? Like, how would Walter Hagen live? Like, yeah, am I living like Hagen? Like, ooh, can I live like Hagen? Like a bracelet that remind you every day to, like, you know, like, what would the Hague do?
Yeah.
God.
What was that cartoon? You sent a cartoon.
Oh, yeah. That's, you'll put that up on the screen if you got that. This is a great, I love this illustration. Yeah, I almost forgot about this. This is, if for those that can't look at it, what it is, it's Hagen dressed as a knight in armor.
Yeah.
And it's in the background, there's a golfer, and it says,
a pro golfer.
Yeah. What does it say on the golfer's head?
Yeah.
Oh, it says pro golfer, golf pro, yeah.
Golf pro.
And he's kind of like shabbily dressed.
Yeah.
And Hagen's like opening a door.
The front door.
And underneath, right by his foot, it says front door.
Yeah.
And he is actually welcoming this pro golfer into, this was in like several different newspapers and magazines. Like, even in his day, they recognize what he was doing for golf.
Okay.
Like, this is an illustration that just, it conceptualizes what he was, you know, what he was about, like what
and
he was doing.
He's got a fancy King's English robe.
Exactly.
At the tip of his sword.
It says snobbery on the robe, yeah.
And so he's defeated the snobbery.
Defeated snobbery, okay. And he's welcoming the pro golfer into the front door. And he's dressed in a knight's, you know, armor and that. And he's got a sword, and he's actually, you know, welcoming, beckoning this guy come through the front door. And so, like, this, it, I mean, this is not just some, you know, this is a legitimate thing that he did. He opened the front door for all the professional golfers to come in.
Yeah.
That's what he did. And this is, like, that's how, you know, that's why I'm just so glad we're doing this whole segment on him, because this is a guy who is, he's not a forgotten. People have heard the name Walter Hagen, but does the modern world realize just how big he was? Does the modern world, do we remember how big of a superstar this guy was?
Yeah.
We're rambling through, like, at some point we're going to get to the end of this, and we're going to do a list of all of his championship victories. And it's just going to be like, six times this and that, five times this and that, six times, you know, four times straight, 15, you know, 11 straight, you know, national open titles. It's just going to be
Palmer and, you know,
it's just going to be rambling through it. And
together to match this.
Yeah. We're going to get to a point where we're just going to be rambling through like all these things. And I think that might be one of the problems, you know, when you're dealing with somebody that's had this level of success is that, you know, you look at all these titles and then you kind of hyper focus on those titles. And then you start to compare it to like, well, how many did Jack Nicklaus win, and how many did Tiger win? Oh, he was like third back to Tiger, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And then you get kind of focused on that rather than like just what he did in the times he was doing it. And like, you know, he was the one setting the benchmark for all others to follow.
Yes.
Like he was this, you know, like people are like, oh, well, this, you know, the, you know, Aaron Judge is, you know, hit its 60th home run, you know, it was, you know, with 60, you know, there these people are going to break, you know, break 60, 61. And the reason baseball 60, you know, 61 home runs is such a special number is because Babe Ruth set that benchmark.
No,
you know what I mean? If you can outdo what Ruth did, then like that's amazing. Even that, like, but Ruth was the one that did it first. He set that benchmark, and then all those to follow are like chasing that benchmark, and they may surpass it.
Sure, yeah.
But that benchmark stands as like the hurdle that one must to overcome in order to get to that next level of just, you know, of where you can even be recognized, you know, in that upper echelon of your sport. And that's what Hagen did.
Yeah.
You know, this guy, I mean, it's just like, and that's, but this is, but I just love this because it actually kind of took you into his life. And it goes, I think it goes a great deal in explaining why the cover of his book said, I don't want to be a millionaire. I just wanted to live like one.
Right.
Yeah. Because Hagen even says in there, he's like, by this point, I still had money left over from Jesse Livermore, but I was also adding to it with my $30,000 every 4 months.
Right.
Like, he's actually talking about, like, but because he's talking about how, you know, his resource drain, like, he's spending this money. Like, he's throwing these parties. These people aren't getting, you know, he is spending this money, and he's like, but he's actually saying, like, by this point, I still had some of this money left, and I was still going to have some of this money left, you know? Like, he's actually talking about, like, it's a ticking clock. Like, yeah. That money's about to be gone.
Those champagne fountains don't fill themselves.
Yeah, like, who's to say that Hagen didn't have some role? Like, I got the champagne fountain, you know, I got the champagne for your fountain or something. Like, maybe it was his idea. Like, hey, I think you should. I mean, like, would you be that surprised if Hagen himself went to Jack Taylor and goes, dude, you need a champagne fountain. Totally need a champagne fountain. And he's like, you know what, Hagen, that's a great idea. Yeah. You know, like, and he's like, I'll even go halves on it with you, man. You know, you're paying me a great salary. I'll even throw some money into it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, like, but I love this because, again, I've always thought of the Roaring Twenties, and I always think of, like, you say, like the Hollywood and then the New York. But this is the Florida and the Hagen experience in the 20s.
Yeah.
And I just, like this is the kind of thing where they're, you know, like a movie would just be like this couple of years. I just think that this would be just like, you know, the setting, the backdrop for a Hagen movie. I think this couple of years right here, which there's so many different things that you could involve in like a Hagen story movie for this. But I think that this would be such an incredible backdrop to begin that point of reference for people. Because even, you know, at one point he's golfing against Bobby Jones, which is a major, we're going to find out in an upcoming episode, that's a major component of his story. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he's golfing against Gene Sarazen in this huge 1923 match. You know, he's going to the Olympics. I mean, you could take a tour around the entire 1920s sporting world, golfing with Babe Ruth and all this. So I just reading it and just looking at it, just going, this guy knew how to live, man.
Yeah.
This guy knew how to live. And, like, now I want to go find a Spanish villa and have some parties, dude. Totally.
We're going to do that next time. We're going to find ourselves a Spanish village. We're going to record live there next time.
That would be awesome. So you want to surprise me and, like, on a show, Jamie? Be like, we got a Spanish villa we're broadcasting from. We're having a party after. I'm like, yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out, checking it out, the video or the audio. Wherever you're at, like, subscribe, leave a comment. We appreciate all of those. The website is DetroitCityOfChampions.com, WearingFunny.com for the merch. And all the links are in the description, as always. Charles, as always, thanks for all the hard work you do putting into this. And
I love it, man. Yeah. I enjoy the show. I love doing these shows with you, Jamie.
Yeah,
it's a great time.
This is great. Yeah,
takes me half my day to get ready for it, but it's worth it. I love doing the show.
Heck yeah. All right, next time. We'll see you all next time. It's Detroit, City of Champions.